Welcome back. This is
very honored Fred or BT's Esoteric Nerd Podcast. I'm out of practice. This used to be the one thing I did, and everything, it always started with, welcome to very honored Frater BT's Esoteric Nerd Podcast. But now I'm doing Chicken Philosophy almost daily, and that always starts with, welcome back, this is Chicken Philosophy. So, I'm a little fucked up. Hi everybody, how are you? I know these episodes only come out like once a year now. It's just how it is, you know. Sometimes things have their time and place. To everything, there's a season. The season of Esoteric Nerd was 2016 to 2017, but I'm still here. I exist, and I'm doing other things as far as like YouTube is concerned or whatever, which we'll get to later. So yeah, it was a good conversation. C's reached out to me and wanted to collab, and this is the first time that I'm going to send him the collab link. We'll see if he accepts it. If he accepted it in your past, that means it says that this is a video by the two of us, Esoteric Nerd and C's Thunder. But, yeah, I've only ever done that with myself or other channels, but, yeah, it's a new thing. If there's anybody out there who I've interviewed in the past and you'd like me to send a collab link to you so that you can, for a specific YouTube channel, just like that, you know, like, I don't know if it's an older video, it might not necessarily like pop up in people's algorithm feed, but whatever, you know, just, yeah, reach out to me or comment below here. So these are the four of the CPCPs, and I'll talk about it after the interview conversation. Yeah, so we'll save that for then. But yeah, without further ado, I think you'll enjoy this. It was fun. It was a laid-back time. It was nice getting to know a cool guy out there. So without any further ado, let's get to that interview. Shall we? Can you hear me?
Hello!
What's up? Nice! Welcome!
I can't hear you.
Welcome to the Esoteric Nerd Podcast. You can't hear me?
I've been hit by Mercury retrograde, my friend.
Uh-oh. Is it me or is it the? Yeah, it should be working. On my end, I think I'm broadcasting.
I can hear you.
Oh, good. I can hear you.
Okay. Oh, nice. I'm up here. Oh, what the heck?
Welcome. Hello.
Okay,
great. Were you
great.
Expecting
okay.
to be somewhere else?
I was, yeah, because, okay, just this morning, so I have a camcorder, right, set up.
Yeah, yeah.
Plugged into the computer. Right, so we get that okay. crispy 1080p, right?
Nice.
But this morning it stopped working. So I was gonna just settle and be like, okay, we're just doing the 480p on the webcam. But okay, it's working. So okay, what's going on here? All
right, hold on. The end result that I download in the end ends up being 480. I don't know why, but yeah, it condenses it down to some small file. It's not even 720, but it's okay. You know, it works.
Hey,
I shove it into a 1080. My intro and outro will be 1080, and then 480 pixels will be stretched across 1080 pixels. You know, however it does that. You know, thanks to Final Cut.
Yeah, here. Are we going? Is it on? Or?
Yes. It's
all
happening.
Right.
It's
okay. Well, hey, how you doing?
A little bit of a rough start. I'll edit out some of the longer pauses, you know, but like people will get to go along with the fun with us. I'm good. I'm okay. Great. How are you?
Good.
If I ask you anything, I'm sorry I didn't let you respond.
Please.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah. Just kind of hit with the Mercury retrograde this morning.
I thought a piece of my setup
broke, so I ordered it online real quick. And then, yeah. Obviously, it's working because I'm up here, so...
So just real quick, you're now, for people who don't know, and I'm sure by now they'll have seen the title of the episode and so on and so forth. And I'm, this is going to be the first collab that I do with anyone other than myself, or one of my other channels. Awesome. Esoteric Nerd and BT and Esoteric Nerd and Chicken Philosophy do collabs, but if you, I'll send you the link at the very least. It's up to you to accept it. But so you're Seize Thunder.
Seize Thunder.
Yes, now, sir. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't lightning the thing that you see and thunder the thing that you hear?
Exactly. Let's jump into that real quick.
A little bit psychedelic?
Sort of. Yeah. So I've been apprenticing under Native American shaman for since 2018. Summer solstice of 2018.
Okay.
And so through that apprenticeship, right, and getting involved in the community... First, you, and, you know, let me know if the audio's good. First, you go through a totem ceremony, right? Mm. So you get your totems, right?
Mm.
And she's a Lakota shaman. And I don't know if she wants me to name drop, but her name's Brave Eagle, right? We have nine totems, right? We have our
check out. There's been, I interviewed a guy who had done a Sundance in the Lakota, and he had spent the pipeline, you know, that he was doing a lot of work at that time. And he had a really interesting story about 77 wow. river stones. And wow. I'll send you that link after we're finished. I'll send you the link.
Please.
It's really, really fun. But anyway, I interrupted you again. Sorry.
We're bouncing up.
The story of the name.
Yeah, so first you get your totems, right? We have nine totems. We have the east, south, west, north, above, below, within, and then left and right. So we have the totems that connect us, right? And these are not just energetic forces that are closest to us, but they are also our allies, and they're going to help you, right? Mm. So if you're having a hard time in the summertime, and your totem of the south, like for me example, my south totem is turkey. So if I'm having a hard time in the south, I'm going to look to my north. Right. And my north totem is spider. So turkey's all about giveaway. Spider's all about weaving and connecting. Hmm. So if I'm having a hard time in the summertime, I'm just getting beat up by life, I'm going to say, okay, how can I weave and connect? How can I, network? How can I talk to people? How can I weave things together, create? The name, it primarily comes from my within and my above totem. My within is lynx, and my above is buffalo. And so the lynx in the Lakota tradition is the knower of secrets, right? Mm. And it's fun because, you know, they have the guardian of secrets. But the guardian of secrets, he's just standing outside the temple. He doesn't get the juicy secrets. But if you're, the knower of secrets, you have a connection to the metaphysics, right? And then the buffalo is the thunder, right? Okay. So the sea's thunder. It's kind of a contradiction. It's kind of a paradox, right? But there's something symbolic in it. To be able to see the sound, it's this higher level of sight.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Nice. Well, hopefully the electricity will come back before... My laptop battery runs out. My laptop battery is kind of crap. But it'll last for half an hour or so. So we'll see. Awesome. We'll see how it goes. Awesome. Wow, now I'm way too bright. Okay. Oh, well. Just temporarily.
Hey, I have a
nice mood thing going. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
at first
far
I thought
out.
It was mood. I thought you were like doing some mood lighting, for the story. I was like, whoa, okay.
Have you ever read Zorro by Isabel Allende?
No. What's it about?
Isabel Allende, her uncle was briefly president of Chile. He was the one that got assassinated by the U.S. I mean, he was the socialist president who, I think it was in the 60s, late 60s. And then the U.S. were like, nope, get out of there. And then they put in a puppet government. And so the niece of that president was a very prolific author. She wrote House of Spirits, which they made a movie with Winona Ryder and Meryl Streep. So that's like a good entry point for Isabel Allende. But she wrote a lot of lovely things. But she wrote a fictionalized, I mean, Zorro is fiction already. I mean, the story, it comes from Hollywood, you know. But she took it as a serious subject and wrote about the like, basically, it was this young boy who's half... he had a Native American grandmother on one side, and but he's mostly Spanish or something. And then he goes on this spirit quest when he's a teenager, and he finds the fox, or which in Spanish is Zorro. And so it's this like really moving. You know, I don't know what tribe. Obviously, it's not Lakota, because that would have been closer to Los Angeles. But it was back when, before California was Mexico, back when it was still Spain. So back when it was before the Mexican Revolution. And I think it covers the Mexican Revolution. So that's the nice thing Isabel Allende does, is she did this with her own family and her own, she's in the background of her own story, and then the foreground is fictional. And so she'll have history unfolding. You know, real history unfolding around these fantastical stories. So anyway, I just thought,
wow,
random free association.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
So I wasn't sure if you wanted people do you separate out your normie life and name from your magical life and name? Like, some people want to draw a clear distinction. Yeah. I obviously don't. I mean, you know, I kind of do for fun, but anybody who looks for more than a few seconds will see all the other ones behind it and realize I'm insane, you know, but so I wasn't sure if I should ask you. I wanted to ask you, and I can edit it out if it's not, but you mentioned Sacramento, and I grew up, born and raised in Los Angeles, and Sacramento for me is when I'm on my way somewhere. I went there the first time. It was, well, maybe not the first time, but it was the Greyhound station on the way to Vancouver. So I spent 10 hours in Sacramento at that Greyhound station. And I got to know the local homeless, but that was in 1999, probably, you know.
Is there like actual conversation, or is it just kind of like...
Yeah. Well, it was a long time ago, though, so I don't know. I don't remember this too many specifics, but, you know. In 99, and then on the way to Vancouver, on the way to Seattle, always, not always, sometimes going through the San Francisco route, you know. But if I'm in a rush, I'd go through Sacramento, you know. So can you tell me something about Sacramento? I mean, so it's the capital of California, right?
Right.
There must be some old Spanish mission there, right? It all started with a Spanish mission.
I don't know the history of it, right? I'm kind of mainly from like Santa Clara, San Jose.
Oh, right? Interesting. And, okay. And other missions.
And I went through this big rite, right, in my life, and I just needed upheaval, right? And so I got upheaval, and I ended up moving out to Sacramento. And then I found Blossoming Path. I found Brave Eagle, started apprenticing there, but Sacramento, and I believe it's called the Sacramento, the sacrament, because it's where the two rivers meet.
Oh,
you know, so there is, so there's some special energy here in that regard.
How cool.
There's something to that, but yeah, I wish I knew more about the history, but that's
nice. What a trip. You do like a course, right? What were you going to say?
All right, real quick. So I just want to say I found your channel through, I was looking for the Supreme Invoking Ritual, the Pentagram.
Oh, you found the ritual channel?
VH Frater.
Right. Yeah.
I first found you. And you're the only one on there. Right? Who's doing it like that? You know what I mean? So I was like, that's freaking awesome. And then what kind of led me to like wanting to reach out and maybe like, you know, talk with you more is because a lot of the times, unfortunately, maybe I'll get some haters for this, but a lot of the times in the Golden Dawn community, right, people who have done it for a while, 20, 30, 40 years, they kind of become like Golden Dawn edgelords, okay? They kind of get into this headspace you know, that I find very very egoic, you know, I find very harmful to the actual practices.
Right, okay.
And so I saw your channel and I felt the energy and I was like, that's pretty cool. And then I saw you do more of like the humorous spin on things. And for me, like humor, that's a green flag. You know, if you ever meet a practitioner and there's not a lot of humor, red flag, right? Red flag, right? So I saw that, the humor, I saw that authenticity, and I was like, okay, this guy's cool. This guy's cool.
That's nice. Cool. Yeah. It helps that I'm kind of, I don't know if it came across at any point, because it's mostly aesthetic. It's mostly like a peacock spreading its feathers, but in my case they're my feathers of my past, so I'm sort of retired at this point, which is kind of part of where the ease comes from. Like I even 10 years ago I probably would have had a few, like, you know, ticks and buttons and strong opinions about, you know, anything related to Golden Dawn, or, and I know I did. I there was a guy who wanted, he was saying, we're going to do the Rites of Eleusis, but not like ancient Greece, like new style. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I've done that before multiple times. Crowley did that, you know. But then, so I went and he was full on like OTO guy. And he was like, here's the script written by Crowley. I'm like, okay, nah, you know, like you said, we were going to do something new. This is the opposite of new. This is 100, you know, 12 years old or whatever. And so, or at that time, it was only, I think it was less than 100, because I think it was 2011. But anyway, and so, what am I talking about? Yeah, so I got very, I mean, I just couldn't do it. I was like, no, like, you know, and he was like, what, are you going to write the script? I'm like, sure, you know, give me a night, you know, and I wrote a satire of Crowley's Saturn Rite. And then I had professional actors come and act it out for this stupid guy, you know, and so I had
an attitude. Wait, this is elaborate. Wait, how did you play?
No, I just happened, I worked in Hollywood and there was some overlap with the order that I was, you know, in. There was a few members that were also, that I knew through, you know, Hollywood and whatnot, so.
Cool. You know, cool, what fun. The heck? I didn't even
know that. Yeah. Of course, I can't reveal. Now, I don't mind breaking, you know, any aspect of, because what happened was when you get to a certain grade, they say, you know, except by permission of the chiefs of the order, I will not reveal any of the secrets. And then at a certain point, someone bopped me on the head and said I was a chief of the order. And there were four other ones, and those three went off and started an order over there, and the other one turned into a fascist over there. Oh, I'm exaggerating a little bit. Sorry, you know. And so I kind of, I went my own way, and I said, tell you what, I'm not affiliated with any of y'all. I'm the Procrustean Order of the Limited Value International Trademark, and I'm the chief adept of my own order of one, and I give myself permission to reveal as much as I want to, but not people's names, not without their permission, you know. Like,
right, that's good. Absolutely. That's,
yeah.
I think I got hit with another Mercury retrograde spell here. Let me make sure my mic just popped up and said something. Okay. All right. We're good.
I think I feel like I brought that up in order because I was leading to something, but then I forgot to get to what I was leading to. Like, that wasn't the actual point I wanted to get to, but I derailed myself.
I was saying the humor.
I hate it when that happens. Oh, right. Yeah. So hence the distance, you know, like it's not tied up in my ego. Like I right now I'm processing through various levels of Buddhism. And so you're more likely to push my buttons talking about Buddhism than about the Golden Dawn. You know, like, but it's sort of like, I'm sort of a guest. But then when I met my wife, and she's actually from, like, her direct ancestors would have either been in Buddha's order or like given food to the monks, you know, like as they were passing through the town every year for 80 years, you know, like she was like from right there in Bihar, like
we're
in Nalanda University, you know, exactly. And so I got chills. I mean, that was, I already had chills for other reasons when we met, you know, but then, so I was like, damn. So I feel like I it gives me a little bit more, you know, confidence to claim Buddhism as my own. Not that it is mine, and, you know, if you want to talk about Buddhism, well, I'm the owner of it, like that guy in Braveheart. It's Ireland is mine!
It's mine.
You know, but, you know, to at least be able, like, because, you know, my dad was Buddhist, and so when I was a little kid and I'd say I was Buddhist, then these ignorant kids would laugh and say, you're not Chinese, you know, or whatever. And
oh, my God!
So, yeah, yeah, so it's like, well, neither was Buddha, so, like, what are we talking about here? You know, but,
yes, yes, awesome. And then I just wanted to bring up, so like I see like on like your YouTube channel, like like, and
I have like a lot of 17 or 19 channels. I don't know if you how many of them you found, but
I think I found 3 or 4. Yeah.
Nice. Chicken Philosophy, Buddhist Books Podcast, the Esoteric Nerd Podcast, Gwydion's Astral Podcast, Gwydion's Poetry as well, the Edward Reeb Channel, Goin' Goin' Gone, VH Shredder BT, The Multiverse Cartographer, Sonnet One, and Indian Hollywoods.
Oh, but there's like a lot of mention of your dad, and right. So he was a spiritualist. He was a practitioner of some nature, or what was his thing?
Oh, he did a little bit of spiritualism, a little bit of nature. His thing, well, yeah, that's a lovely question. How to put it in a nutshell in a way that doesn't just result in the next 3 hours of it being me talking about my dad and not saying too little. I don't think I could say too little, even if I tried. Gosh. He was born in Shanghai, China, and it kind of formed the core of his foundation of his identity is having been born in China, you know. So he felt like China was his. And, you know, even if somebody came along who was born and raised there, he'd be like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, but I was there before all that, you know, like, and yeah, but you left when you were 6 months old, you know, like that doesn't count. You know?
Hey, that's but, it.
But so he got into being a druid. He called himself a neo-druid and wrote poetry, you know, with that kind of flair in the late 50s. And then he got into hermeticism. I think Builders of the Adytum style, like I don't know exactly, but he was into the Rider-Waite deck and he was familiar with Builders of the Adytum. We sort of lived in the area of its main HQ, or it's, you know, its original headquarters in the 90042 of Highland Park, I think, or maybe Eagle Rock, but anyway. So then he met Kes Fry, who's also a prominent presence on Esoteric Nerd. He has a playlist, Kes Fry. I've interviewed him a whole bunch of times because he interviewed my dad. Well, first he got my dad into Tibetan Buddhism in 1966. What? So by the time I got into being alive, you know, my dad was into Tibetan Buddhism, but he also read tarot, but that was a thing from his past. So then he died when I was 15. So I basically had a map and I was like, okay, I'm going to follow the map that he did, except a little more hardcore. Ooh, instead of just kind of going to Builders and added them and stuff, I'm going to join the Golden Dawn. I didn't know how that was going to turn out. I didn't know it was going to be 18 and a half years and that, you know, and all that. But then when that was over, when it was time for my exit, which was very graceful, after our order separated from the real creep at the top, the guy who was all right, all things considered, you know, was the head of the temple, and he asked me if I wanted to leave. And I've never been asked that before. You know, like leaving meant you failed. Leaving meant you were a fallen one. Leaving meant you betrayed everything that you swore to uphold. And anybody who left, we were never supposed to talk to. You know, eventually that kind of softened up. But So he just asked me, and he's like, yeah, we can make the announcement tonight that you're leaving, you know, and I was like, okay, let's do it. And so at the spring equinox, I was like, goodbye, everybody, you know, I'm leaving the order. And
spring equinox specifically?
Yeah, yeah, spring equinox of...
Was that intentional?
2013. No, it just happened to be when he and I had the conversation. It was very spontaneous. He was like, do you want to leave the order?
That's awesome.
And I said, yes. And he said, okay, we'll make the announcement tonight. And because he wanted to, you know, like, because we went through a lot in 2011. I won't talk too much about it because a lot of people already know all this stuff. And it's actually kind of like re-stimulates old raw nerves to talk about too much for some people. But so in 2011, there was a big split. And so things were pretty like weird. I mean, you know, like we weren't having our mandatory Sunday meetings is what it came down to. Yeah. And then after 2 years, then it was like, okay, well, that Sora, that so-and-so is coming back and she thinks we're serious, so we have to have mandatory meetings again. I'm like, I'm not coming to any mandatory meetings. You know, like, I'm done with mandatory meetings. That's the first half of my life. Now I'm in the second half of my life where I don't have mandatory meetings at some fucking stupid cult, you know. And he was like, do you want to leave? And I was like, is that an option? Can I leave? And he was like, of course you can leave. And I'm like, well, then I'll fucking leave. And he was like, well, think about it. And I'm like, well, okay, let me think. Yeah, I'm going to leave. What are you talking about? You know, this is, and so, you know, there's so much more to life than this stupid shit, you know. And it was very graceful at the time. Again, this was all to lead toward an explanation of something that I forgot what it was. Oh, I keep doing that. I shouldn't have smoked.
I don't know. Oh, you're dead.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So then when it was time for me to leave, I was like, okay, well, actually shortly before that, I had gotten hardcore into like asana yoga at work and sitting lotus position and reading Zen and meditating Zen style, you know, So after I left the Golden Dawn, I got hardcore into that and I went to Japan. But one thing about Japan is all the Buddhist temples there, everything has an explanation about its Sanskrit origin. And there's just this deep love, even though there's some racism toward India in that same country. But at the same time, in the Buddhism itself, there's a deep love, and in the history, like reading Dogen, he calls it the Western Heavens, and he calls Japan the land of savages, and the civilization comes from China, and spiritual things and religion comes from the Western Heavens, which is India, you know, and so I kind of got stuck on India, and I was an Uber driver because I was trying to make ends meet. I quit my desk job. I think people get annoyed when I take over my own interviews, but I'll finish talking and I'll let you talk for a full hour, you know. No. So I was an Uber driver to make ends meet, and there was this woman who was on her way to a Theravadan Buddhist cult somewhere in Southern California, and she was Indian, and I was like, yeah, I'm into Tibetan Buddhism and Japanese Buddhism, and she's like, you know, Buddha was Indian, right?
No, not again. They're back.
Oh man. So, I came here to, at a big transition point, I came to Nepal to where Buddha was born. I came to India to where he, attained enlightenment and began teaching and passed away. I was on a pilgrimage but then I ended up meeting Piyu, and then, you know, it worked out very nicely that now I live in India. It's really great.
It's awesome.
Been here 8 years now. So
that's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
You know, I don't know what your intention is for this kind of collab, but I'm open. I want to hear your story.
It is kind of a collab. Yeah, I guess if I think of it not as, I mean, I'm gonna be doing an intro and an outro, but yeah, if it's a collab, then I'm talking about myself.
Okay, can I add in one thing though?
Yeah. Go for it.
Can I cue the chants? Can I say cue the chants, and then you do the Homo?
Which chant?
I don't know. I don't know if it's with every video, but I noticed a few videos. You have the Shingon Buddhist fire chant.
Oh yeah, that's at the beginning. Yeah, of every episode.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'll cue that right there. That's fun.
Yes. I told my fiance, I was like, I wonder if he's going to let me cue the chants. Like, I wonder if he's going to... Yeah, right.
There was a long time where, like, when I went to Japan, it was just, like, I had met some Aquarians. I met some, like, second generation people from the Source family, and they eventually, like, I ended up being Pi Mander Aquarian. And so then there was this woman in Japan who happened to be, like, a big fan. She was a fan of, like, you know, crazy music from the 60s and 70s. So that was how she knew of them. But that was how we got connected. Then she said, you have to go to Shingon. When I was in Osaka, I said, where in Osaka should I go? She said, Mount Koyasan. It's 3 hours north of Osaka. So I went. And I didn't know that there was a Japanese Vajrayana. Like, I wasn't, I don't know. I was always, I think I was suspicious of Google. I didn't want Google and Wikipedia to inform my spiritual evolution, you know, and growing awareness of these things. And so, but it, so it worked out that it was this random connection that got me to go there. And I was there and I was like, this is beautiful. And then I saw that the little statues of monks had little dorjas. And I was like, whoa. And then later I did research and found out all about Shingon Buddhism after I had already been there on the 1200 year anniversary of their founding up on Mount Koyasan.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have that, you know, astral space in this in inside to walk around in, you know, when you're learning something. And wow. And the same with going to these places in like Lumbini and Nepal and Bihar, and like the road between where Mahavira from Jainism and where Buddha was, you know, there was like a road that would have taken 18 hours to walk, and it took an hour and a half to drive between where they were, and their lifetimes overlapped probably, and Lord Buddha, sorry, I'm in the habit of calling him that. I know it sounds kind of cringe. He made reference to Mahavira, but Mahavira didn't make reference to Lord Buddha. So I think it's more likely that Mahavira might have already passed away before people were talking too much about Buddha. And there was at least 61 that we know of these ascetic orders running around in that same area at the same time. Yeah. It's like, it was like the 60s. It was like a century of gurus and, you know, cults, ascetic cults. What do they call it? Shramana, the Shramana traditions, like yoga and Jainism and Buddhism. And then 58 others, apparently. But some of them, it was like, yeah, drink alcohol and dance and have sex with strangers. And it's like, so you're a Shramana tradition? Doesn't Shramana mean asceticism? So what does Shramana mean if not asceticism? When, you know, it's really weird, you know, like, some of them lasted until like the 1200s. They lasted from 6th century BC, like the present day form of Jainism and Buddhism. Like the Jainism, he came around and he was like, I'm going to renew Jainism because you all already heard about it hundreds of years ago. But then he clarified and codified it. So a lot of people say Mahavira was the founder of Jainism. But according to Mahavira, he wasn't. Like, it was like 20 some odd people before him. And so I thought it was fascinating when I went there. This was before I found out there were 58 or 59 other different Shramana traditions, but everybody kind of knows the story of Lord Buddha being with a group where he's starving himself, and then he stops starving himself, and so the other guys that he's meditating with like leave, and they're like, oh, you're not for real, because of Mahavir. Mahavir starved himself for like I think 12 years, and he was naked, and he was the big famous guru, omniscient master, enlightened master, in that, like in Rajgir, which was 18 hours walk from Bodh Gaya, and he was like advising kings and stuff, and this is would have been something that Buddha heard about when he was a little kid. So he, as a prince, he probably got inspired by stories of Mahavira, you know, and and so then he kind of started out as a Jainist. I mean, it seemed to me, and to me that was like news. I had never considered that before. But Piyu, who was born and raised in that area, was like, yeah, basically, yeah, probably, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like obviously, you know, and I was like, I've never heard this before. I didn't know it was obvious to anybody. You know, like but yeah, it seems like he started out on that path and then kind of went his own way and started his own thing. Like from a certain perspective, he was the Crowley of Jainism, you know. He's like, you can make a religion out of that, you know.
Without all the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. But he did walk around naked, so maybe a little.
Yeah, he wanted to make it more accessible because he thought that's it was cool. Too gatekeepy. I mean, basically, that's my gist, what I've gathered so far. But I'm in the process of reading all the books so that I can know what I'm talking about a bit more based on scriptures themselves rather than what somebody heard. And, you know, because I heard and absorbed a lot from just people, from starting from my parents and then everybody else and then in a cult and everything else. So I have all this random bits of information, but I don't know where they all come from if I had to point to a scripture source, you know, so.
Yeah, that's the way to learn. Fun. That's the way to learn, though.
Yeah, supplementing, like being a hermit with just a bunch of books. but sharing it to anybody who wants it, you know, just putting it out there, documenting the process at the same time.
Yeah. So you got some cool connections. So you come from a history of Druidism, right? That Eastern magic, it's kind of baked in there, right?
Oh, I was telling you about my dad. Yeah. So he. And basically that, I guess I finished. He was into UFOs and all kinds of stuff. I thought, these days conspiracy theories have a particular character and place on the planet that they didn't have back in the 90s. When my dad was telling me about the face on Mars, you know, and that it's half lion, half hominid because of the multidimensional beings who bred us here and they were mining for gold and all this stuff. And so I heard about all this stuff, but I was the only person I knew on Earth who had heard any of this stuff, you know, but now I just keep it to myself. I mean, I obviously don't think anything, but it's fun to know all that stuff. It's fun to
absolutely, you know,
right? But I guess it all comes from a comic book series in the 40s or something that it's the same one Poke Runyon mythologizes in some of his movies and stuff. But Poke Runyon, I interviewed Poke Runyon on Esoteriner 20 or something like that, 23, I don't know. But no, 23 was Brian Dahl. If you haven't checked out episode 23, it's an album of gothic Golden Dawn music, basically, in the 90s. Loretta's Doll, a band called Loretta's Doll, like the same studio that they were using to record one of their albums, they, after hours, they recorded Golden Dawn LVX, where they sing all the rituals, you know, all the main rituals.
Oh yeah, I think I have a buddy in Canada. It's he's really into like super niche like Golden Dawn stuff, and he knows like things I haven't even heard about, you know. I think he mentioned like some bands that were doing music that was specifically GD ritual.
Yeah. But in the 20s episode, I interviewed Poke Runyon, and he said that he was into all that stuff as a joke, but my dad was into it for real, that my dad actually believed all that stuff. So I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. That's really cool, man. That's really awesome.
It's fun. Fun stuff. But he was a college teacher. Oh, sorry. So. No.
Oh, sorry. Have you tried out, have you heard of Kujian? Kujikiri.
No.
It's like a Japanese Tibetan system of mysticism, and it goes over the nine hand seals, pretty much the nine mudras connect to the chakras and the dantians.
What I'm opting for is I'm slowly going through Tibetan source texts and Japanese source texts and discovering those connections on my own rather than reading books written by people who did that research, because I don't want to miss out on the joy of discovering the connections, the differences, the similarities and all of that stuff. So that's why I'm sticking to the source text for the most part.
Very cool.
I try to avoid reading anything by anyone who was alive in the past 100 years or so, you know, with some exceptions, you know, but unless it's sci-fi source or something, but yeah, it's just personal preference. Like I said, it's to me, that's very little difference between talking to someone at a party, you know, in some of the esoteric circles that I've been privy to, versus reading a book by somebody that was written 50 years ago. Like I've got enough of that. I want to get the source stuff and sort through it on my own and develop my own clear understanding of things rather than, that guy in that cult disagrees with that guy in the same cult, but in that other cult, everybody thinks this about that. And it's like, okay, why start at maximum complexity and work my way back to simplicity when I can start with simplicity before I even really get to know all the maximum complexity? Because I saw how a small family of orders and traditions can get on each other's nerves and differentiate from each other and have inferiority and superiority complexes in relationship to each other. So Dion Fortune, I think, said she doesn't trust any guru that's alive. So I can kind of relate with that. Stick to the ones who have already come and gone and left their legacy behind for people to look at, you know, but aren't going to come in and ask for your credit card number, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, don't you do like a course? You teach.
Yeah, so I teach. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not, I don't mean speaking of which. Mentally, you know, the mental connection was made. What are these books? There's a cross and triangle, a yellow cross and triangle.
Oh yeah, that's the Complete Golden Dawn.
Cool. Yeah, oh, yeah, nice, yeah. Nice.
Go ahead. Oh, the little funny tidbit is when I first started the Golden Dawn, right, I picked up one of these books, right? And then before I'd really researched a whole bunch, I looked on eBay and I saw there was another, Golden Dawn books. Oh, and so I bought like two additional copies of the same books. I was just like, oh man.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
So I told my teacher, I'm like, hey B, like, I found these other Golden Dawn books. Do you have these? She's like, what other Golden Dawn books? I'm like, you know, 1, same. 2, and 3, and 4. And she's like, oh, Mijo. But just a little funny tidbit. I do teach a course. It's at Blessing Path in Fair Oaks. And it's kind of a blend of, it's just sort of my path, right? It's just what has worked for me, right? Yeah. Like, I don't really consider myself like a traditional Golden Dawn guy. But I heavily connect to the magic of the Golden Dawn and the message behind it. But a lot of my path, it led me to different parts and pieces, right? Mm. So like a lot of it is focused around like the shamanism, that I picked up from Brave Eagle. And then the other stuff is just things that I discovered based out of need or necessity, right? So like going, like my Golden Dawn journey started when I was like 18, I'm 20, 26, 27 now, right? So I'm a young guy. So it started when I was like 18, right? And just kind of breaking out of the mold and trying to discover truth. I felt like the Golden Dawn wasn't quite enough for me personally. And right. So I branched out into different things. I branched out into Kujian. Kujian is the Tibetan Buddhist tradition.
I practiced
that for a while. Yeah. Hmm. And that I kind of took a really slow approach. And then got into Reiki, got into different forms of like neurolinguistic programming mixed with the Golden Dawn. Got into, have you heard of EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, the tapping? Got into EFT tapping. That's been huge. Different Hindu chakra work, right? Stuff like that. So my course is just teaching what I know works. Hey, this is what I know. This is what I like. Hey, hopefully this helps you, right? And so it's we're not initiating. We're not going into like the grades or anything, but we're going over the base rituals and we're going over meditation. We're doing some work with the Taras. We're doing some Kujian, different types of intonations. Like the next class will be like a hermetic intonation course, you know, because I feel like a lot of folks online, like when they're toning, right, I feel like, this is my opinion, right, I feel like a lot of folks in the Golden Dawn, like they lose the heart of the magic, you know what I mean? Like for me, the Golden Dawn, it's about sharing light and spreading spiritual light, and I feel like when you do that and you allow the forces of light and creator to work through you, That's how you get activated. That's how the awakening comes about, is through that love. Yeah. Just a quick example. I have a lot of magical stories at Chipotle, okay? I love Chipotle. Chipotle's a magical place for me.
Got myself a chicken burrito.
Nice.
So I was at Chipotle, right? And pretty much I was just focusing on the intention of just doing light work, light working, right? So helping people, sending prayers to people, right? Those sorts of things, just having that energy go out. And so my spirit guide kind of tapped me on the shoulders like, hey, pay attention. I'm like, okay, to what? Right? This, you know, when in my experience.
Make sure that everything fits inside the burrito.
The whole appeal of a burrito is that all of the ingredients are contained within the confines of the tortilla.
right. But yeah. So pretty much she's like, hey, pay attention. I'm like, okay, to what? I didn't know. And so I'm just on hyper alert. And I see this guy coming to the door. and I feel like hold the door for him.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm mm-hmm. like, okay. So I hold the door for him, and when I do that, I feel this energy coming from my crown. Mm. And so I say to him in my mind and in my heart, when I hold the door open for him, I'm like, may you be blessed, my brother, upon your pathways. May the doors be open for you. Right? Just said that prayer in my mind to him. Mm. And he walks out. He's like, oh, thank you. Right? Hold the door open for me. And then he turns around after I finish my prayer. He's like, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I just want to thank you so much. Mm. I was like, whoa. You know, his spirit felt it. A part of him felt
yeah.
it. A part yeah. of him clocked it. You know what I mean? Mm. So I feel like that's the golden dawn, I feel, is to like to purify you, to get you aligned, to get you balanced, to get you activated, connected to God, to get you connected to the source. And then once yeah. you have the source, right, it's not just for you, right? It's not just right. for us. Right. Once you have the power, the activation, the Holy Guardian Angel, whatever that force is, it's yeah. to share it. It's to send it out.
I would say yes, but.
Tell me, please.
Yes, but. That can be, it can be, that sentiment can be misused, misinterpreted, and abused. Uh-huh. By others and even by yourself, though usually it doesn't happen by yourself unless you're imitating how someone else would do it. Like, in other words, you have received this gift, therefore you must share it. Yes, so you feel obligated to be a teacher, obligated to train people, obligated to do your healing work, obligated to show up every week, you know, for the rest of your life. You know, so I'm speaking from experience. Speaking, yeah, exactly, and so, but if the spreading of light can include chicken philosophy, you've seen, then I agree with you, because I feel like I'm doing it, but I insist on doing it my way, you know. So, but there's people that look at me and go, this guy, look at him, he just breaks his oath, and oh, he's not running temples, he's not, you know, like the letter of the, yeah, but I, in my mind, I abide by the five, you know, ways that a Rosicrucian is supposed to conduct themselves in the world, including the traveling, including the writing letters to the brethren who I consider to be the entire rest of the earth, and not just on the day of C, but every day I upload to Chicken Philosophy, you know, like letting everybody know yeah. what where I'm at in my my research journey on all the different lands of humanity, and you know, this is my temple here, and I don't know, the vault of the Adepti, the Christian Rosenkreutz's seven-sided room where he had all the paraphernalia and souvenirs and things he collected and all the things he felt were important. Like, yeah, this is. I did the same thing before, without realizing that's what I was doing. And then one day, like the seventh or eighth time, I listened to. I forget what number it is, but I recite the whole Fama Fraternitatis on an episode of Esoteric Nerd with Zelda playing in the background, Zelda music. And it wasn't until I'd listened to it six or seven times that I realized, oh, that was his office. That was like his room. You know, he lived in that room. That was where he nerded out on all of his stuff that he picked up over the years in Fez and Damascus and Egypt and everywhere, you know. Yeah. And so good stuff. I don't know.
Awesome.
So it inspires me, and I feel like it left an imprint, but I try to only keep the imprint because it's there already. I just sort of identify it, but I try to keep it in the best possible way for me, yeah. you know, like, but yeah, other people will have their sense of that spiritual obligation specifically signed and sealed and with red tape and all to a particular organization and a particular way of thinking and way of life and everything. Yeah. But yeah,
that
giving
can be dangerous.
Yeah. Giving yeah can take many forms, I'd say.
And, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, as long as your intention is to give back in some way, even if it's just that hug to that stranger that needs it or whatever it may be, right? I feel like the oaths and the obligations and it must be this way and blah, 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 blah. You know, when I tune into Great Mystery, when I tune into Wankantanka and I'm like, hey, Wankantanka, You know, do I need to do all that? Right. I feel like no. No.
Yeah, no.
I feel like, you
there's
know?
Specific things, positive and negative, that come from doing all that, you know, and you don't need them, you know, like some people might want them. It's sort of like, are you into it? Like, what aesthetic are you into? Do you hang out at Hot Topic, or are you more of a Renaissance fair person? Like what's, do you go in black for black and white tile, or do you prefer like forests at night, you know, and moonlight, or maybe both, maybe do this and then do that on the side, you know, or whatever, you know, like,
yeah. Awesome.
Something.
Well, yeah, so that's my course, right? It's just sort of what I,
yeah, that's
what
good
I feel, you know what I mean? And,
yeah, I like, and, it it sounds good. I'll send you some links. I'll send you some links. I did a workshop, a 5-week workshop, where I tried to condense the whole Golden Dawn from outer order to inner order into a 5-week course. And so I'll send you the handouts, the five handouts. I'll put them in the link of this
video.
Is
that on YouTube?
Well. Yeah. No, it's just on my website. It's PDFs. Yeah.
So I kind of do, but the thing about like being a solo practitioner is like, well, I'm mostly a solo practitioner because I have the class. I kind of do I do magic with them as well. But I've been solo most of my time.
Yeah,
right?
I think when it comes to like not being part of a cult or a lineage, like you're a solo practitioner. You know, like that's basically what that means. Like, doesn't mean you only work alone. Like I'm
right.
I feel like I work with other people.
Yeah, I feel like I would like you know, the initiations in the temple. You know, I think there is something special about doing it physically, you know, and
there was a period of 5 minutes where some friends and I were, we were involved in those schisms and stuff. And he was from a different order, and we would perform the first few grade levels for people who wanted to go through and experience the current, but didn't want to join an order, you know? And there was one point where there was someone who was like really upset. Like she didn't understand. She didn't speak English and she didn't realize that's what we were doing. And she's like, so who's my proctor? And we're like, no, you just get to experience the neophyte ritual. You know, like we can do a Zelator for you if you want, but you're not going to get into anybody's second order, you know, by way of, me and my friend here, you know, it's like, but we had all the tools. We had the temple. Everything was proper. We had the experience. Everybody was there, was either members of an order or members of a different order or former members of an order. And it was all just like rogue in the middle of the night. It was, you know, it was fun.
That's awesome. That's how it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Just people getting together, you know, connecting with light. So I want to ask, so you've been doing it for 20, 30 years
Well, I joined initially in November of 94, so however many years that is, 6 plus 26, you know, minus a few months, so 31 and some change, yeah.
Heck yeah. So how does that feel, like, in the auric field? Like, what do you experience in your day-to-day? Do you feel like a solidity? Do you feel like a connection? Like, how does that express itself in your day-to-day?
I don't know the difference. I mean, I was 16, my dad died, and then I joined the Golden Dawn a year later, and I vaguely remember who I was when I joined, so I certainly don't know who an alternate me would be like, or think like, or feel like, who didn't join. But not everything, I mean, a lot of what I think and feel and observe, it's like a language is what it is. And I wanted to say this earlier, so I'm glad it's coming up. It's like knowing English. Knowing English is good because you can speak English over there, you can speak English over there because of British colonialism, right? And similarly, the Golden Dawn, you know, appropriated everything into one big mess and then, you know, fit it together as nicely as possible with Queen Victoria's crown on top and symbolism and the tarot and everything. And so it's a universal language in the same way that English Spanish or Latin is a universal language. Like, yeah, a lot of people speak it, right. And it's the origin of a lot of things. So you can recognize its shadow in Thelema or Scientology or Wicca, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the greatest, most ultimate, important thing. It just means it was influenced. Right. It's everybody's great-grandfather because of all the raping, you know, like... I'm not saying Golden Dawn did. I'm saying British Empire. You know, I'm drawing a parallel. Like,
yeah, I get you.
Like, there's... It's the spiritual... maybe the highest spiritual expression, maybe, of Victorian England, you know, like... so that's a very specific thing, though. That's Victorian England, is it not? You know, like, she was the Empress of India, after all. So when they're talking about tatwas... You know, they're looking down their nose at all these other ignoramus British people who don't take seriously the stuff that our queen is the empress of. You know, like so for them, they had access to it. Their sense of entitlement to ownership, you know, may have come from a weird, funky place. But anybody can learn that language. And learn to think in that language and process through those feelings awkwardly, you know, over the course of decades, maybe, you know, like, but the downside is if you only speak that language for too long, then that's the only language you know. And then it's really easy to make a mistake of thinking it is a capital U universal language, as in like God speaks it or something, you know, like, more so than Lakota or anything else, you know?
Right.
And so it's good to have one foot in something else, I think.
Absolutely.
And some people have one foot in like exoteric Christianity and one foot in Golden Dawn. And I think that's not enough, because you can still be fascist, you know, like there's plenty of fascists who go to church and know Golden Dawn magic, which is really sad, you know, and but not so many that go to a temple or go to you know what I mean, like a synagogue or, you know, or a mosque, you know, like if somebody goes to a mosque on Friday and a Golden Dawn temple on Saturday, that's a cool motherfucker I want to meet, you know, and they're probably not fascist, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, but if somebody goes to Catholic church on Sunday and goes to Golden Dawn temple on Saturday, I'm like, tell me a little more about them before I, you know, like agree to go to this dinner, you know, or whatever, you know, no.
Yeah.
No,
I think like, there's something really important.
But but there's a lot of good ones. And I walked that path for years. I mean, because we had a sort of a peer pressure thing. Everybody had to join the Catholic Church, you know. And there was one guy that was rebellious and joined the Orthodox Church. So I joined the Orthodox Catholic Church to try to reconcile that rogue guy with the cult leader, you know. You know what I mean? Like,
a lot of Catholic chants come from in your videos?
Yeah, the leader was Catholic. He was Italian. Cicero, you know, so, you know, like, there's a little bit of that over there, too. But not as much, I don't think. We had phases. Well, no, I'm not saying anything about Cicero other than that he's Italian and Catholic. Like, he doesn't put it too much. Like, sometimes he has, like, you know, I've always been inspired because when I go to church, I hear this, and when I go into the temple, I hear this. He has his personal things, but he doesn't, like, put it into, like, other people or try to make it. But the order that I was in, it was kind of like, especially as people got up into Philosophus and Portal, it was sort of like, okay, now let's bring them over into, like, a Roman Catholic, you know, sort of thing. But that was unique to our temple. The Portals, you know, started wearing rosaries, you know, and stuff like that. But nobody was so overtly Catholic. In fact, it was sort of, there were a lot of like sinister aspects to it. Like when people were digging up the birth certificate of the leader's son saying, see, he was 50 or his mother was 15 when he was conceived and all this. And so his solution was, let's go uber Catholic, publicly. And then we can say, well, what do you want your Golden Dawn with? Paganism, like those other orders, or Jesus, like us?
And
people want to ran, you know, he's like, let's reframe the argument. Let's reframe, you know, he was doing these shitty Fox News tactics before I ever watched Outfoxed and realized, you know, anybody else was doing it, you know. So, you know. You know, but also it was a legitimate thing. Like there were other like born and raised Catholics that were, you know, like when they got to the glass ceiling. You know, we didn't have any Zaluski 6=5 stuff, I guess. So, so like they got up to a certain point where it was like, well, what else? And it was like, I don't know. Let's go to church and ask them, you know, or whatever. Or they just started like getting into these this whole thing of like you have to have things baptized. You know, you'd go to the temple and say, go to the church and say, could you sprinkle this parchment with holy water? And the priest would raise an eyebrow at you, like, what are you kids doing? You know.
Did he do it?
Yeah, no, and our priest actually, he got to know. So funny story. I don't know if I've ever shared this story. I think I have. Yeah. But so I went to this Russian Orthodox Catholic church, and then a bunch of people started coming with me, and I had this little army of 8 people. And so then 4 of us were like ready to join. And so we asked the priest, like, so what do we do? Is there an RCIA thing? He's like, no, if you go through this, you know, it's sort of a backdoor. You can skip RCIA. Just, you know, we'll just talk. And so he's like, I like swordfish and wine. So we're like, okay. And he's like, at this restaurant. And we're like, okay. So we start taking him out to swordfish and wine at this restaurant. And he's like, so how do you all know each other? And I was like, well... And everybody was like, oh, shit, he's going to tell him, you know? Like, and so by like 40 minutes later, and the priest is like quiet, and then he starts sharing the esoteric symbolism on the icons that we gave him as a gift and stuff. And so he just sort of was like, okay, you know, I'll just, you know, pretend I didn't hear that. And so, but then like he would come out and give his homily, you know, and he'd say, oh, and the church needs... a little bit of extra prosperity energy sent our way, if you don't mind, you know, for, cause we're having a sale this Sunday. We're going to be on the street, you know, selling little Russian Christmas ornaments. And, so think prosperity vibes. And he'd point to us like the,
we no knew way.
The magicians. And then he was talking about the Sefer Yetzirah and the double cubic altar and abyss of height and abyss of depth and abyss of the east and west during his homilies and relating that. That to, you know, normie Orthodox Christianity and
what?
Stuff. So we felt like we were doing something. We felt like we were somehow creating this bridge between esoteric and exoteric. On the 700 year anniversary of Black Friday, October 13th of 2007, me and a few other Golden Dawners and a small group of the you know, these Orthodox all went together to see the Dead Sea Scrolls in San Diego. And I felt like there was some kind of mystical thing happening. I made this video called Pyramids. Anyway, Depeche Mode.
That's awesome. Yeah. So he knew about some of these occult things without you telling him.
Yeah, I not everything, but, you know, and we were doing this thing where, you know, it, again, to like sugarcoat our reputation. I was feeding homeless people with Mother Teresa's nuns, like on the first or second Sunday of every month, and getting a small army together. I did that for 10 years. And then one day when I left the order, I had to tell the nuns that I wasn't going to do that anymore, just because I wasn't going to do that anymore. You know, they were like, you know, well, who's going to do it? And I'm like, here's the number of my cult leader, you know, my ex-cult leader. You can call him and ask him who's going to do it. And he's like, oh, no, we don't have anybody. Sorry. Then the nuns are calling me back like, nobody's available, sir. You gonna do it? And I'm like, no. You know, it was like after like, you know, 10 years of whatever good feelings built up of like working with these nuns and everything, just like in that last conversation, it was like I killed their puppy, you know. It's just like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that anymore.
Came like
expectation. Yeah. Like that was such a kind of, you know, but anyway. There were a lot of things I had to cut. I had to quit my job. I had to, you know, do this and that before I could like leave the country forever. So.
Wow. That's
I didn't awesome. Necessarily know I was going to. I had a feeling I was, but I also kind of thought I would come back, but then, no, I'm not coming back, you know, like, obviously at this point.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, because I was thinking I'd become a monk. I was like, I'll either become a monk or, like, who knows, maybe I'll meet somebody and fall in love and get married, you know. And I was actually thinking of her, my Facebook friend at the time, you know. But then we met. And it happened, you know. And
wow. So, okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Does she know that you kind of had a feeling before you went there?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I think so, you touched on something really important. Like when it comes to the Golden Dawn, I do feel like you have to bridge it to another system. My personally is what I feel. You know, like if you're just Golden Dawn, I feel like it creates a lot of I feel like it can create a lot of ego and a lot of just a lack of connection to the earth and to nature. You know.
You start to think the letters are the words, you know, or you start to think that you mistake the symbol for the finger for the moon, basically. Like the golden dawn is one particular finger pointing at the universal moon, but it doesn't have the copyright on it. You know, it has a very clever, interesting British way of pointing at the moon, but which might resonate with somebody who speaks English as a first language, for instance. Or, anyone. There's other people who don't that get into Golden Dawn also, you know. Right. I mean, it's compatible with those exoteric forms of Christianity. So you get a lot of, like, Catholics and ex-Catholics in, like, you know, the Americas, for instance, who get interested in Golden Dawn. Because it fits really well. You've got the archangels. You've got, you know, like, it doesn't take much to Catholicize, paint it a little bit Catholic, you know. Right. But I think, yeah, the style, the way that in those ritual videos, I was imitating the guy that I mentioned who became Greek Orthodox, and he started he became a deacon, and then he started imitating the Greek Orthodox style of vibrating and chanting in his rituals, and I started imitating him, and so that's kind of where that comes from, that style. And then, of course, the Latin that was added to, like, kiss the ass of the Catholic cult leader back in 1995, when my mom became Stilistes, her team of officers. So she was the first person to do Aspergus me Domine, his sopo et mundi por. I think it was 96, maybe it was 96.
Wow.
But, awesome. So yeah, so it's sort of the most Catholic-y, but also, yeah, like nobody's really performing it that way. I mean, you know, those rituals, but from my perspective there, I'm one of probably 30 or 40 people who do my rituals that way. So from their perspective, I'm like, you know, like, why did he, you know, but I the ones I talk to they don't hate me for revealing it or doing it on a video, you know. Like, it's instructive, if anything else. I mean, there's a lot of people, especially because I see people, like, I know the Elbear P, and I'm like, okay, well, show me. Do the Kabbalistic cross. And they say, Ate Malkuth. I'm like, yeah, but intone it. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
You know? Oh, no!
So by doing that, at least it gives people an idea, you know, even if they don't know necessarily everything that they're seeing, they get a sense of, like, that the pentagram should be this big, not this big. And, you know, that vibrating should, you know, fill the room if he can. I mean, some people have neighbors that would freak out and that kind of thing. So you got to deal with what you're given in life, you know. So.
Absolutely. And something to add on to that is high magic, right? High magic and low magic, right? High magic, it could take you so high, right, that you're losing the connection to here. You know
what
I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
And in native traditions, you know, we say, you know, we're at the bottom of the totem pole. Humans are, right?
Yeah.
The stones were here before us. The trees were here before us. The oceans were here before us.
That's one thing about, I think all Abrahamic religion has a bad habit of looking down at the earth in not a good way, you know, associating the earth with the feminine, and then associating the feminine with those shitty 500 years they spent in Babylon, you know, where they have a goddess, and so let's get rid of our goddess and just be all about men, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, and so then the big three Abrahamic religions inherited that toxicity, and it was taken for granted by a lot of the folks that were the founders of the Golden Dawn. So you can justify it and say solar and lunar instead of saying masculine and feminine or some incel slang. You know, you can use astral. You know, Eve, she reached out, and you know the serpent, and you know, blah blah blah. And he's, yeah, but we all have masculine and feminine within us. Yeah, but men are more masculine, women are more feminine, you know, like, okay.
Oh, gosh.
Stupid shit. And then, so I've been reading Carl Jung and getting infuriated because he just swallows whole this, you know, women are irrational and emotional and lunar, and men are perfect and spiritual and intelligent and light.
Oh,
you know,
no. Oh, no.
Fucking yin and yang, you know, the most.
Why, Carl? Yeah,
but he's Carl Jung, exactly. But he took a big step. That a lot of us have been able to benefit from the big step that he took, but that it's like Thomas Jefferson took a big step, but we don't necessarily want to kiss his ass. But no, I'll say Thomas Jefferson was worse than Carl Jung. You know, Carl Jung didn't impregnate any domestic servants. So I'll just put it that way.
Oh God,
that we know of, maybe his patients, but you know, that was a little different. You know. His clients,
okay.
You know.
I got a question for you, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, in I think it was Blavatsky, okay? And I have a book. It's called The Rosicrucian Cosmoconception, right?
Okay.
And have you heard of that book?
I'm not all that familiar with anything my Golden Dawn grade material. I lost interest in the occult before I had permission to read any books about the occult. And so, as a result, I haven't read anything except for what was handed to me from a photocopy machine by my cult leaders.
Oh, gotcha. sorry. I'm sorry. But
it is what it is. You know, I just wasn't interested in anything else. I mean, I like by the time, like I said, you know, like it had already turned toxic before, you know. But I'll answer the question. If you explain to me and describe it to me, then I can give you my two cents, you know.
Right. So I was reading the book of my fiance, right? And it was really profound in the way that they were describing life and all of these different like occult concepts, right?
Mm, mm.
And then it just said like some off the wall like racist stuff. Okay,
right.
Pause there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with Blavatsky enough to know about that.
Okay, Blavatsky too. And then Blavatsky was like, oh, and then something, and the white people, you know, our skin is Keter or something, and we are the. I'm like, right. Whoa!
We're the symbols, like the yellow are the mind, the white are the symbols, the black is the body, the red is the heart or something, the emotions or the gut. I don't know. They have this really twisted, really old fashioned way of, sometimes what happens is there's a glorification of like East Asia. So there's this sense, or maybe Tibet. So you run into theosophists or theosophy adjacent people who are like, if only I were born a Tibetan, you know, like I may be superior to many races, but no, there's one that's superior to me. Then I'd be able to meditate on the mountaintop. And it's like, okay, you don't have to be racist. Like you can just accept the form of the humanity that you've been gifted and, you know, use it to attain enlightenment. You know, in this second, you know, instead of whining about anyway, you know,
I don't know why that happens,
instead
know?
Of Tibetan.
is that what Crowley said?
Yeah, no, that's what. No, I won't say his name, but he's been on Esoteric before. But you know, and my grandma a little bit, like she seemed to. I mean, this is my mom's interpretation, so I don't take it with a grain of salt, but like she kind of felt like my maternal grandma thought that Asians were the top race and then white people and then everybody, you know, it's okay. Then it's the usual racism after that. But like, she was a little bit nuanced, you know, she didn't think she was the best. She was like, hey. Oh, everybody's a piece of shit except for you. Oh yeah. It's after you. Thank you for the gift of these chopsticks, you know, like, okay.
Oh no.
Calm down, you know.
It's a little better than everyone, maybe.
I guess. Maybe. But yeah. So my dad was born in China and grew up Buddhist ended up Buddhist, and so then I followed that map. So after, you know, I was Buddhist underneath while the whole time I was Golden Dawn, but then when I left Golden Dawn I was like, anyway, I'm on my way to Lumbini now, you know, and so then
Yeah.
So now, and then, so I did, you know, just focus on Buddhism. I was wearing that Buddhist monk's robe, you know, and I started Buddhist yeah. Books podcast and reading Buddhist scripture. And then an American came and was surprised I wasn't wearing the robe at home. And I was like, oh shit. So I started Chicken Philosophy, partly motivated by wanting to let people know that I'm still okay, you know, that I'm still here. You know? By I mean Fred or BT and also Edward and also Gwydion, you know.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
There's four of us, you know, like there's the monk guy, and call him Pymander, and BT, Edward, and Gwydion. And so there you gotcha. Go. Gwydion's the Celtic influence.
Very cool.
The Welsh god. Well, sort of. He's more of a trickster artist character. He's not really all that related to the god, you know. But I'll introduce you to Gwydion. I'll have to send you a bunch of links later when I'm editing this. I'll have to every time you'll know where I'm at in the editing process by what link you get randomly by email.
Perfect. So tell me a little bit, so for me, like, when did you notice like things in the Golden Dawn change for you, right? So like for me, like, when I first started, I was doing the rituals, right? Every day. And then I got this message from someone, right? This spirit, this intelligence got channeled through someone else. And they were pretty much just telling me, get serious, right? They said it in other words, but it was this intense download of energy that came through them to say, get serious, right? And so,
I'd really say if you're on your way to Las Vegas, and you're taking the 5 south, and then Google says, take the 15 east. It's very good advice for that time and space. But get serious, I wouldn't necessarily cling to for the rest of your life. But maybe, get more serious than you are right now for the moment, for the next few months, you know, like, you know,
right.
I mean, or, no, I won't say that. Everybody's signs are unique for them. It might be something meant for your whole life. But for me, seriousness is something that I take with a grain of salt, you know, like
dig in. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said about humor, you know, humor is a lack of seriousness, you know, and, but you can be serious about humor. Yeah, and you can, I mean, it depends on your definition of serious. It's sort of like good. Is God good if evil exists? Well, it depends on your definition of good or omnibenevolence or whatever, you know. Yeah. So it depends on your definition of serious. Like happiness, like contentment and peace. If happiness can include depression, if the whole spectrum, the whole L. Ron Hubbard's tone scale of emotions, you know, like from serenity of beingness to total failure and everything in between, is accessible and an option and temporary, always temporary. And especially if you can maneuver intentionally through it, if all of that can be included under some sort of capital H definition of happiness, then I'd say happiness is a thing to shoot for, but only if that's the definition of happiness. Because getting stuck on one vibration and thinking getting stuck on that vibration is the goal is just an error. Like, it's just a mistake, you know, like,
very cool. Yeah.
Because you got to wake up in the morning, but at the same time, when you go to sleep at night, it's of assistance to be able to take everything that you are, everything that you've experienced, and everything that you know as a human being, and just sort of put it in the fire, and then walk past the fire into the worlds that are beyond. And then when you wake up in the morning, all that stuff will be there. You know, you don't have to intentionally pick it up again. It'll get picked up, you know. But taking everything from this muddy, you know, checkerboard plane up into the astral and just going back and forth between the low astral and the material world for 80 years can be a little bit of a drag, I think. You got to try to aim a little higher at least once a week or so.
Well, yeah, so after I got that message from my friend, I started to really, really take the practices and the discipline.
Oh, right.
Seriously,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, as in do it. Yeah, yeah. I guess I'm speaking from the vantage point of someone who already took it seriously. So.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Get the training one way or the other. Yeah. Yeah. From yourself or from others. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then when I was, I was doing the four solar adorations, the pentagrams, the middle pillar, like all the stops, right? And then while I was in that flow of like keeping that momentum going, I kind of took it a little too far. Like I was doing like 3 hours, 4 hours every day of practicing of different things like EFT and gratitude. And then I was doing this and that, and I would be up until 12 a.m. Right.
Mm.
But while I was doing that, I was getting all these like signs and synchronicities. And one of them that came up that was very profound, was I was doing the adoration at midnight. To Khepri, and at the end, so like, you know, like, I don't know if this is a universal thing, but like, you can feel something's gonna happen, like something's gonna manifest, you can feel like a spirit guide is gonna come through, you can feel like a god is gonna appear, you can feel like this yeah. something in the air, like something special is gonna happen right now, like you can feel it, right? So I was feeling that energy when I was finishing my prayer. And then right when that finished, I finished my prayer, I saw Anubis, like in my third eye, my vision, I saw him coming out of the shadow of the room and just standing there, just being this presence. And it was almost like this acknowledgement and this flow of energy. And it's because I took it seriously. And I haven't quite digested all of this. But I've heard, and I do feel that Saturn and the structure and the discipline of Saturn is part of the great initiator. You have to be serious. You have to do the work in order for the gods to come. You know what I mean? I haven't quite fully digested that, but I'm getting a lot of chills. but I just thought I would share. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences where like, I don't know who you connect to the most? Is it like your ancestors or your spirit guides or when you're calling in the spiritual force? Like, who's your go-to?
A cauldron of hot coals returning everything to dust and light is the closest thing to any kind of idol that I have at this stage in life.
Cool.
But you know, you can interpret, all nature is rejuvenated by fire and make it a crucifix if you want to, but you know, why when it works just as well as a cauldron? But when I was younger, Hermes was a big one, Pan before that. Paul Muad'Dib, there were a number of things. Jesus for a while. And then Shiva and Buddha of, you know, I mean, I'm speaking kind of abstractly, like over the course of my life, these were archetypes or beings or people that I connected to in that way. Anubis. Yeah. There was a time, there was a coyote that I followed down a hillside, and that was as the closest thing to a manifestation of Anubis. But I've been Carrix and been Sentinel and all that, and so you wear Anubis for hours, so you get a connection with Anubis eventually, being in a Golden Dawn temple. But you know, you kind of work with all of them, but they kind of become interchangeable. And then in the very last grade, you're told you're a chameleon who can just change color. That's what this whole thing is just changing color. So hence the cauldron of coal. Because in order to be in a state, it's like the LVX, but it's like LVX as a motor instead of just, you know, like a brrrr, you know, with every cycle being an LVX, so that it's a constant state of rebirth and regeneration, but also a constant state of death and the confrontation of death. The judgment card is another good one, because the four types of fire, Aral has the latent heat within him, and then he connects with the source of fire, then he connects with the fire that destroys everything temporal, and then recognizes the fire that he is, which is his soul, which is immortal, which is sort of like, I mean, okay, it's comforting. It's like you can be a little more hardcore and leave off that last part, you know, but in the Practicus grade, you know, and, you know, spoilers, I guess, but the, that whole process, it's very Buddhism adjacent, I find. Like I said, I went through the Golden Dawn grades coming from a Buddhist, standpoint philosophically,
awesome.
not necessarily religiously, but I had more affinity for Buddhist religions than for other religions, generally speaking. Yeah. You know, I mean, just sort of personally. But I eventually, like, as a flow reversal experiment, you know, joined the Catholic Church and all that, you know, for the cult and the cause and everything. And for the idea of merging the inner and the outer, merging, you know, it was like sort of an intentional, like, first we all hallucinated we were going to solve world peace by getting the Jews and the Arabs, or, you know, in our ignorance, we called it that, the Israelis and the Palestinians to get along. So some of us went and buried some talismans in Jerusalem, and we were like, okay, that solves that. And then waited a few minutes and we're like, why isn't it solved? Because we need to go meet Mother Teresa, you know, the successor, and go to India and bury talismans to end the economic disparity between the different classes and different people, because that's the real issue, not the war, you know. Oh, okay. And that, okay, so we did that. Now that's that Edward's gonna work with the nuns from now on until kingdom come. Okay, and then now what? Well, I guess we've got to merge the Roman Catholic Church with our order, so we all need to join the Catholic Church. So it was all part of like a bigger hallucination, like a bigger, like, not mass quite, it was just 20 people, you know, like like the inner cult, you know, the secret agenda of
yeah, well,
at that time, you know.
Yeah, there's something special about that, though. You know,
yeah. Well, it resulted in the
Jerusalem. That's awesome.
Yeah. It resulted in the VH Fred or BT channel, if nothing else. You know, like that. But that awesome style, and holding a rosary while doing, you know, some Golden Dawn stuff in a white actual Catholic robe from the Catholic supply store and stuff like that, is that was that particular current. Which I think it's beautiful that that's an option, or it's beautiful. I mean, like I said, most people who would be drawn to that are fascists. You know, so it's kind of like, I have mixed feelings on the subject, but I'm glad that to have helped open the doorway for some of these normies to get weird, you know.
Some of the normies, but
you know, like Protestant or Orthodox or
right,
or Roman Catholics who are a little curious, you know, like not quite ready for an OTO Gnostic Mass or something, but, you know, like maybe some Golden Dawn, you know, like
maybe a Columbus, so nice cross.
Yeah. Like, it's good stuff for them. Or
that's even it's Lord's Prayer.
If someone who runs screaming from mainstream Christianity can kind of find their way back to Jesus by way of the Golden Dawn, you know, and in a way that's cute and personal for them, but then might just make them a Republican. You know, I don't know. You know, it's just amazing. Like, looking back at like how many of my students, one of my students became a Republican congresswoman, you know, and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Whoa, what?
I mean, you know, like they just all kind of had that affinity, you know, and it's just like, I don't know how. I just always assumed that my political assumptions were part of the alchemy of good and evil and knowing the difference between them, you know, like, but I guess not, you know. I guess you can, yeah. It's all a matter of opinion. And it's like, well,
gosh.
Like, because Ahira says unbalanced power power is, weakness, or unbalanced mercy is weakness and lack of will. And they're like, yeah, send in ice. You know, it's like everybody's interpreting things where I'm like, you know, like unbalanced power is evil and unbalanced mercy isn't going to be like, you have to go punch him in the face, you know, and so like punch ice in the face. But they're like, no, ice is the one that you know what I mean? Like just as a silly cartoon example, you know, like the people who think the way I think about it, sadly, I feel sometimes like I'm in the minority, but there are people that I know of that are heads of temples and imperators and hierophants who do, you know, who are on the left side of the spectrum as well. So, you know, it's not completely hopeless, but for a while it felt like it was hopeless. It was part of, like, I left the US in 2017, like right when things had gotten really weird, you know, like, you know, my whole life, it was like the Nazis were the bad guys, you know, Harrison Ford punches them in the face. That's like, they're not, it's a joke to think that there would be American Nazis. Like there were these Illinois American Nazis in some, movie, I forget which movie, and they just, I think Dan Aykroyd, like, runs them off the road. Blues Brothers, maybe?
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi just driving up, mowing down the American Nazis in Illinois. And the guy that played one of the Klopeks in The Burbs was, like, dressed up as a Nazi ringleader, you know. But it was a joke back then. But then in 2016, they were marching, and there were thousands of them, and it was so creepy, you know. Like, what the fuck is going on? So that was one of the things that motivated me to go ahead and buy that one-way ticket, you know. Get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, so what was it? So did you just feel the pull to India? Or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, aside from, like, you know, like, well, it goes all the way back, I guess. I always felt a staleness because what happened, I think, that my only explanation for it is that it's, you know, perhaps it's genetic. Like that my distant ancestors were among the first to, like, get the fuck out of there and come to New York, like from Holland, you know, like the New Amsterdam days in the 1620s, and you know, and down other branches in different contexts and from different places. But then the East Coast was like, ah, fuck that, let's go west, you know. And then they went to Michigan, and then or Kansas, or, you know, depending on, again, the branch. And then they were like, fuck that, let's go all the way to California, let's go to Los Angeles. So, like, some of the first settlers of Los Angeles as an American city, as a United States city after the war with Mexico, you know, were my ancestors, you know, like in Highland Park, Los Angeles. And then I was born as, like, the sixth and seventh generation of people in Los Angeles. So day I was born, my DNA was screaming, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, where am I going to go? Where am I going to go? Hawaii? You know? And so, so I had that bug, you know, I had that feeling like that hot footed, you know, like time to go, you know, like that Pink Floyd, time to go. And so, you know, but then at a certain point I became enamored, like I said, with Japan and Zen and everything. Because in 2011, when I've heard told this story before on Esoteric Nerd, some people might get bored, but it's okay. In 2011, during the big schism, my part of my self-medication was Dogen, who brought Zen into Japan in the 1200s. And so I read all of his lectures and writings and everything. And then that got me into sitting in lotus position, because he was hardcore. Like, the Buddha mind seal is sitting in lotus position in meditation. You'll automatically become enlightened if you do that long enough. And I'm like, well, fuck it. Okay. And so I became a yoga teacher because I wanted to do lotus position so that I could meditate like Dogen said to in the 1200s and everything. And so then, like I said, I went to Japan and saw in the Buddhist temples, everything was pointing to India. And then I had that Uber passenger that was like, you know, it all goes back to India, right? I'm like, I know,
you
know.
Universe and is so, talking to you.
So then finally, I went to Nepal first, stayed there for 4 months. It was great. I went to Bhutan, you know, like kind of like still into that Vajrayana Tibetan thing, but also wanted to ground myself in the old school, the Hinayana, you know, the Theravada, the motherland of it all, even though a lot of it was erased, you know, 1,000 years ago from India, but then it came back. And it's, you know, there's Japanese orders that build, you know, pagodas and stuff all over India. And of course the Tibetan government in exile, and you know millions of I think millions, if not high hundreds of thousands, but probably low millions at the very least of Tibetan refugees living in India, with various temples and beautiful temples in all over India. So I don't even know if there's Tibetan temples in the U.S. I know there's Tibetan cults and people's like back in shop crystal shops at night, you know, and stuff. but as far as like the big beautiful, you know, multi red and blue and green and yellow temples with the interesting animals and painted and symbols and wheels and all that, I don't know. I don't know if they. I know there's one in Brazil. I know there's at least one in Brazil.
So how did you get settled in India? Because you were this is before you met your.
I got married. Yeah, oh, no, I met her. I met her when I met her the first week I was in India.
Because you guys arrived. You guys knew each other on Facebook.
Yeah, I was hiking with someone from Germany. And, you know, we had sort of a disagreement. And so there was this other person from Germany. And I was like, she was like, I'm going to go to Delhi tomorrow. And I'm like, I'll go with you, you know. And then so this, it was a whole thing. Anyway, so then, so she was like, I'm supposed to meet this guy, but he's unavailable. I'm like, oh, don't worry. I'll show you around. I've never been there, you know. And then, that guy's friend is able to, you know, like show me around. And so that was this guy, Yash. And so anyway, then she got on a plane and left, and then Yash and I were there, and he's like, you smoke weed? I'm like, yeah. And so then I hung out with Yash for 2 weeks at his place. That was awesome. And, you know, that was like literally my first day. No, I just, I knew more people in Nepal. When I was in Nepal for 4 months, I was like, when I was thinking of going to India, I'm like, I know people in Nepal. I don't know anyone in India. But then I knew some people through, I had a podcast at the time called To Be a Yogi. So I knew a few people through that. But then I came here and then I met Piyu. I sent her a message, I think, on Facebook when I was in Bhutan and very, very drunk.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, hey, I'm going to be in Delhi in a few months. And I got 3 or 4 people I want to meet. Let me know if you want to be number 5. You know, just sort of like real low key about it, you know. But then then we met.
I'm not trying to marry you or anything, but just, you know, you're number 5.
Yeah. Then we met and she showed me around and took me to a Krishna temple and then took me to Taj Mahal. So that's fun.
Yeah. Just a little tidbit. I used to be on like different like occult internet forums and stuff, right? And I had like a Discord channel on there. And I used to be big into like the Sumerian magic. And I had this glyph of Shamash. He's the Sumerian sun god. Mm. And also, side note,
which tradition?
A Sumerian. Sumerian.
Oh, right. Long. Okay.
Yeah.
Because Shemesh in Hebrew is sun.
That's what I was trying to remember to tell
you.
And I was like, Shamash in something else, Golden Dawn, means I thank you. So I had that glyph up, right, on my name, right? I didn't get my medicine name at that time. I was Theo Sola 10. My medicine name is Sea Thunder. But this new girl joins the Discord server, right? And I'm like, oh, what the heck? Like, I immediately felt this connection to her. And so I message her, we start talking, and then it's nothing serious at first, but then we start to develop this connection, and she's like, hey, you know, when I saw your symbol and your name, like, I felt like you were really important. Like, I felt like I knew you. Like, I felt a strong connection. I was like, okay, well, when I saw your name, I thought you were really important. Like, I felt a deep connection as well.
Okay? Yeah.
So maybe this will be like a personal phone call we can do later, but I pretty much went through a really rough time. I was in my car. I was homeless, right? And I went to this tarot reader. It was Planet Earth Rising. I don't know if I can give out her name, so I'll just skip that part. But she gave me this reading, and she told me, hey. This is before I was homeless. This is before I was in my car. She gave me this reading. She said, hey, all these things are going to happen to you. You're going to meet this person. You're going to go here. You're going to be in your car. You're going to meet this girl online. And you're going to fall in love with her. You're going to drive across the United States. And you're going to get her. And you're going to, you know, live together in California. Yeah. Is that...
Sorry. Nice. And it all came true?
So, yeah. So at the time, when I got the reading, I was like, oh, you know, whatever. This is like this is some typical malarkey. You know? They're telling me I'm going to fly across the United States and we're going to drive back together and I'm going to live with this girl I just met. There's no way. There's no way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was just like, humor me. You know, what's her name? What's her first name? And she said, Madison, right?
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, huh. I was like, huh, okay. So I just absorbed it. I just soaked it in. I just like, okay. You know, at the time, I was
an unusual name.
Yeah, they
could have gone with Jennifer or something, but yeah.
Right.
Have you seen Splash with Daryl Hannah and Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, so then fast forward. Yeah, we pretty much fall in love. I take a flight all the way to freaking the South. We drive back in her car in two, three days, right? And then we freaking move in together, and we've been together for like 7-8 years, you know, or sorry, nice. 6-7 years. Yeah. Mm. So it's just like this serendipity just brought us together.
When I was in Nepal, I was hanging out with this this older Sufi guy, and he had a jewelry store. And he was teaching me some things, and then he gave me this, I bought from him, this sapphire ring, and he gave it to me, and he said, wear this every day, and within 40 days, you'll meet the woman that you're meant to be with for the rest of your life, probably in India. And he was only 13 days, he was 13 days off. I met her 53 days after that.
Yeah, it's the time zones, you know, a little yeah. Lag there. That's amazing. Was he like a spiritual guy or?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he had a teacher, and you know, he had a past. Yeah, like in Kathmandu, Durbar Square, Kathmandu, they used to have a big old sign that said, you know, hashish and stuff like that. So he was there from those days. Like when he was in his 20s, he was running a jewelry shop in the middle of the hippie. Mecca of the world, you know, and so, and he was still there as an older man, but he had like, you know, was no longer doing all that wild stuff he did when he was younger, but he had some stories, you know, and he wasn't like a teacher or a guru or a shaykh or anything, but he was a devotee, but I made him teach me, but he insisted that I not call him a teacher and that kind of thing. But then he gave me his name though. At one point he named me Reeb Hosni. His name was Hosni. So yeah.
What does Reeb Hosni mean?
Reeb is my name. That's my actual surname.
Oh.
So Reeb-Hosni. Which is, I'll put a link right here. There's a story I wrote called Reeb Hosni that tells a better version of that story that I just told you.
Awesome. And
people can check it out.
Yeah, just, it's really cool. Like, just, you know, creator just works through people sometimes, you know?
Yeah,
you get
yeah.
those messages you're supposed to receive. My buddy, I can't remember where he was, but he was walking with some friends out, I think it was downtown Sac or something. And this homeless guy is just like yelling at him, right? At first, it's not very pleasant, but then he starts to tell him his whole entire life growing up. The homeless guy's just yelling at him, telling him, "Hey, this is where you went. This is your life. This is your parents. This is who you are now, and this is where you're going." And he's just like, "What?" You know?
Yeah.
And you hear stories like in ancient mythology about the gods coming down and the gods working through people. You know? And I think that's what happened when I was given that reading. I think something was moving through her in a special way. And I went back and I got another reading from her. And it I mean, it was good, but it wasn't like that. You know, I think something was moving through her.
In alignment that day, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I asked her, I was like, "Hey, you know, you told me this, 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 and this all came true. Like, do you know that?" She's like, oh, I don't give names. I don't do names. I don't give people names. That wasn't me. That wasn't me. I was like,
oh, what?
You know, it's okay.
Doesn't want to take it. How interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's definitely like what they call CDs, SIDDHI, but the way like some people are after them, but I'm more of a, I tend toward the more vanilla approach of when you're on the quest for enlightenment, there's a lot of things that might try to distract you from right. the purity and simplicity of that quest, and one of them is getting magical powers or psychic abilities or something, and then because then there's the question of, well, what do I do with them? And it reminds me of, I don't know, Gandalf and the ring or something. Like he said no to the ring because he knew that if he had it, he would think, well, yeah. I'll use this for good. So if you can read people's mind, then you're like, well, I'll use this for good, except for one time when I use it for selfish, you know. But then that's there's that old story of, you know, do they call me Jose the House Builder? No, but you fuck one goat. Have you heard that joke?
Yeah,
that's basically, you can build the joke on top of that. You know, that's basically
okay.
What's the point? The point is, there was one time I was wandering around Glendale and this guy, he looked from an Eastern orientation, like he was, I don't know, from India maybe or somewhere, but he was wearing like definitely some kind of ceremonial garb, like he just wandered out of his cult or temple somewhere, you know. And he came up to me and he took a piece of paper and he wrote on it, crumpled it up, put it in my hand, closed my hand, and took two steps back away from me, and he said, say a number, and I said six, and he said, say a flower, and I said rose, and he said, say a color, and I said yellow, and he said, open the piece of paper in your hand, and it said six yellow roses. And I was like, okay, I'm listening, you know, like, and then from that point he was just like, there's a great spiritual battle and there's many of us that are, yeah, and you too, or you're also one of us, and we're all fighting together for good and whatever. And I don't know, there wasn't anything particularly useful I took away from it, you know. But well, he wanted money though, so he's like, I need help. And I only had a five and a one, and he said, don't think, just give. So I gave him the five. I'm like, that's a smooth, you know. So sometimes if you ever hear me on Chicken Philosophy say, don't think, just do, you know, don't think, just click like and subscribe, you know, like I'm that's my own internal reference to that guy I met in Glendale that day.
Just to take away from that, what do you think about that? Like the spiritual war?
Well, it's nice to have. Well, I don't know about that so much as, I mean, it's a metaphor that does make sense, but one of many, and it's optional. Yeah. You know, like so it's not an all encompassing macrocosmic truth that we're all stuck in like flies in sap or something. But but it is one way to look at it. Like if you look at everything and see a great oneness moving and undulating within itself, that's also true. But then if the white blood cells, I mean, you know, they're called white blood cells. I'm not drawing an allegory with the white race or anything kinky.
No, you're not Bobovsky.
No, but I've you know, at certain points in my life, like projected into my own blood on a microscopic level to give a rousing speech to my white blood cells, you know, and had this like army of white blood cells about, this is what you're fighting for, you know, and that kind of thing. And then felt much better the next morning, you know. So like warfare does exist in a spiritual context in certain ways and at different times. And sometimes the side calling itself good isn't, you know, like looking at the early Christians tearing apart, you know, the librarian at Alexandria and all that, like they thought they were good. And, you know, even a lot of people today like might think, well, that was a brutal time, but ultimately it was for Jesus. You know, ultimately it resulted in the world embracing Christianity, and you know, Satan got in there and told Muhammad to get stand in our way, but you know, ultimately, you know, like people have their stupid shit, you know, but they're free to have their stupid shit. Like this is a world where anybody can look at the world in all kinds of different ways, and you know,
yeah, And are you familiar with the, hey, where does vibe in
the spiritual war? Yeah, no, like there, yeah. That there's forces, like, you know, I mean, like, maybe I'm simplifying by calling it a spiritual war. Maybe I don't think he did. But, you know, that there's forces that, you know, there's many of us that fight for good or that work for good, that work to manifest good in this world, and that there's forces out there that want something else, you know,
right.
Or they want something ugly and something that takes away aliveness from people. And, you know, and so on various levels, like I think it's important, you know, it's important that everybody have, you know, healthy food and whatnot. But I think it's important for people to have the freedom to think, you know, basically just that, you know, the freedom to think outside of the box of whatever box it is. You know, sometimes boxes are good and healthy. Sometimes people, there's a certain type of person that needs a box, maybe temporarily, needs a specific box to, like, I'm only going to think inside this box for the next, you know, 100 lifetimes. And it's like, that's fine. You know, like we all have our phases, you know, one of the things I read on Chicken Philosophy is Meccan Revelations, which, I'm always looking for the baby in the bathwater. And one of them is Ibn Arabi talking about the different types of saints and how there's different stations, and there's that David Bowie song's From Station to Station, you know, like they take on the station of the servant of God and then abandon the station of the servant of God and take on a different station, and their theophany is different, or their way they perceive God, or the way they perceive their relationship to God, or the way they understand self in its relationship to God, or when it gets dissolved, or, you know, this kind of thing, and that they're all true, but they contradict each other, you know, and so it's like a really nice, like, level to groove with, you know. Is he's talking about different schools of Islam and different schools of Sufism, but it might as well be different schools of philosophy throughout the human race and all history, you know, and including every individual take on it. And and so it's like, you know, you got to go to the gas station before you go on the highway. So, you know, that doesn't mean the gas station is the one truth that everybody needs to convert to gas station. But, you know, it's necessary for that person at that moment, you know, on their path. You know.
Absolutely. And just in your studies, have you heard of, like, the Brotherhood of Light or concepts of that?
I've heard the phrase before, but I was never interested enough to, like, say, tell me more, you know. But there's various things that are, I think, that are called that, or that, you know, yeah, like, there's abstract ideas. I like the idea of the true and invisible Rosicrucian order. I think that was a W.B. Yeats thing. That instead of which lineage is it, the answer is Mu, you know, which is like Japanese for that's a stupid question, you know. No, it's the Zen masters will say Mu sometimes. It just, like, means no with a capital N or something, you know. But what was I talking about? Yeah.
In your practices, like the Brotherhood of Light, you know, it can be many things. The true and invisible Rosicrucian order. It could be the White Temple, right? Whatever that is. It came through a medicine journey, where I had this contact, and what it felt like was like all these stars in the sky, right? But all of them together forming this grid of light and truth and hope and love, right? And so to me, the Brotherhood of Light, the brother sisterhood of light, it's the unity of consciousness that is for divinity, right? And so like when I'm doing my rituals, or I'm going right, I'm pulling down the light from source, and then I'm calling in that Brotherhood of Light. I'm calling in other magi, I'm calling in other priests, other priestesses, I'm calling in the shamans, I'm calling in the monks of the Yamabushi, right? I'm calling in those spiritual forces together.
Yeah.
Because we're all serving the same purpose, you know? So just in your practice, I don't know, if this resonates with you, call in those other monks, the other masters, right? Mm. See them all around you while you're doing your chants for the world. I did want to share, because I got a message for you if you're open to it. I really felt I really felt your connection to your ancestors, like when I was thinking about, hey, what should we talk about? And I was thinking about, you know, just kind of feeling into it. I really felt your connection to your ancestors and the magic that's in you. And then when I was kind of in that space and I was getting that vision, I was seeing you know those prayer wheels that where you hold it and you walk around it?
Yeah.
Okay. Pills, man. And you're walking around it. I totally see you doing that and like doing your chants for the world, doing your chants for your family, for your loved ones, for the light, and just walking in this humble prayer, right? Whatever that magic is for you, whatever that mantra is for you, sending that out through the prayer wheel, I feel would be very powerful. And I hope that resonates.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, those prayer wheels are beautiful. There was a time when I went before I went to Nepal, I went to South Africa, and I went to this cult. long story short, we did this ancestor work where they told me, you know, first light the candle and say the names of all the ancestors whose names you know. Like, you know, say their name, father of... you know, mother of, okay. But they didn't know what they were getting themselves into because I was kneeling there for like 20 minutes saying, John Young, father of Isaac McComb, father of Barbara McComb, mother of, you know, like Frances Marion Nicol, father of Ella Nicol, mother of Dorothy Ellington, you know, Saddam Henninger, yeah, mother of Jean, you know, like, just like going on and on. Okay, and then this line, you know, like, but then, so after the ritual, then, you know, we had baby powder on our faces and black hooded robes and this intense incense down there in Africa, you know, and then I went and laid down and took a nap, and I had this vivid experience of my grandmother, who was like literally a fundamentalist Christian, in the room that had been my old Golden Dawn temple where my great-great-grandmother smoked a corncob pipe. Great-great-great-grandmother smoked a corncob pipe. And my grandma was in there. Like, she, one time I was doing magic in there, I had my red robe on and I had my sword out and I was, you know, oh, and then my grandma starts like opening the door and I'm like, Grandma, don't come in here. I'm like turning around with my sword and my regalia. And I'm like, I'll be right down. Okay, and then I slammed the door on her hand, and her hand was bleeding. I'm like, what a fucking piece of shit grandson I am, you know? And so that grandmother was in that room, right? But the room was empty because I gave away all the furniture. It was empty and it was just carpet. And she's slowly walking counterclockwise, and she looks very disturbed. And then I woke up laying on a couch in Africa after having invoked my ancestors in a voodoo ritual, you know. So I told the cult leader, and he was really excited, and he's like, it worked.
I think that's really awesome.
I freak out a lot of my ancestors, I guess. You know.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I don't know what he's doing. That's why when I'm doing ancestor work and I know that they're like, you know, they're not really into what I'm into, call them their higher self. Call them their higher self. Their higher self
is beyond all that stuff. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, my dad was into that. Like, he'd be talking to someone across the table and whatever this little mouth is saying, I'm speaking to their higher self, you know. Like,
Yeah.
you get it. I mean, you don't get it, but you get it, you know.
Yes. Oh, I do want to say, man, I think it's really special that you've been doing the magic for all that time, and then you gave it all away. Like, that's
I gave away objects.
With symbolism, right?
Yeah,
like, you gave away the objects, you gave away the rebellion, you gave away the temple, you know, and then you became empty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And
in that emptiness, you went to India, and now you're focusing on the emptiness.
Yeah,
I got chills, man.
I brought this. Yeah, I brought this, but the blue part broke in transit, so I had to glue it back together. Which, of course, I took as another symbol. You know, of course, some LVX process that I emotionally broke and was put back together. It went through an LVX on the blue part of my cross. You know, whatever.
Yeah, but, have you written a book about like your journey? and your journey to
well,
India?
Well, I was going to. I've written. My journey to India is in my books for sure.
Yeah.
But I haven't written a book specifically about that and only that. That Reeb Hasani thing is about that. That's a chapter that's completely focused on that. And that was a wild
time.
And that's
on the playlist?
Yeah. Me reciting it is on the playlist, but it's also in one of my books. I actually happen to have it right in front of me, but I'm using it to hold up the the computer. I had a feeling this was going to happen today. But it's called Smaller Mouse, and you can see this is a painting I did on LSD in 1998.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, actually, this is a play on the painting. See, I made this on my computer based on the house that was on this part of the painting. So this is various interpretations of various parts of the painting overlaid on the painting.
Wow.
So there's a book called The Small Gray Mouse, and so this is Smaller Mouse, the sequel of Small Gray Mouse. And so some of it is short stories, and some of it is like stories that are connected with other stories,
So
it's sort of like a connected thing. And some of it are just personal things that literally happened, you know, at particular times in my life. And
is that on Amazon?
Oh, yeah, it's on Kindle, too. But, you know, of course, it's nice to hold a thing in your hand. This one in particular, I guess I'll do a little bit of a sales pitch here. One moment, please. So what happened was I put out Small Mouse, and part of Small Mouse was a story called the Interdimensional... Well, it was the Interdimensional Coffee House. And then part of Smaller Mouse was a story called The New World Empire, which was the origin story of the Interdimensional Coffee House. So I decided to publish a third book called The Multiverse Cartographer that fills in all the gaps and clarifies the picture so that if someone's read both the mouse books, then they'll get all the backdrop and the scenery around the edges and everything and know the whole New World Empire and Interdimensional Coffee House saga, but with all this other random shit floating in the midst of it, you know. And you know, some things are implied, and that's all you get. Like, you know, like if you think of, like, if you're like, whatever happened to that character, if you think about it, you'll already know. It's like, you know, like everything was pointing to where that was going to go. But anyway, so when I put out that third book, people would read the third book by itself without having read the mouse books and become intensely frustrated because it was like a Swiss cheese story. There was all the important parts and all the big moments were missing from it because they were in the mouse books. So what I did was I took the two mouse books and the Multiverse Cartographer and combined them with a fourth section into a book called The New World Empire and the Interdimensional Coffee House.
What is it about? It's about your journey?
Well, it's all the short stories that I wrote between the ages of 12 and 46. And some of them are personal and some of them are in more imagination related, but they're all kind of personal. I mean, they're all connected to, you know, if I'm not literally saying something, then I'm symbolically saying it. It's a jumble of short stories, but some of the short stories connect. So if somebody's looking for a certain type of thing that is like anything else they've ever experienced before, then they're not going to get it, you know, and they can criticize. Yeah. This needs to be more like, well, this is what it is. It's just a collection of all the short stories I've written in my whole life, you know. And then there's poetry books, too. Taco was the first one because there was a poem I wrote called Taco. And so the book, 600 pages of poetry called Taco. So then I came up with a second book of 600 pages of poetry called E-Burrito. So there's Taco and E-Burrito. And I'm in the middle of, and I'm on page 187 of the 600 pages of the third book, which will come out in another 5 or 10 years, called Hamster Sauce. So.
Well, what?
And all my stories are somewhere in the poetry or somewhere in the prose. It's not necessarily coherent. For a while I was toying with the idea of writing a biography or a fictionalized biography of of my life in the Golden Dawn cult called the Esoteric Nerd, but writing it was bumming me out too much, you know. Like, I wrote a number of chapters, but, like, I haven't written enough to justify publishing it, and I don't really feel like continuing it. You know, like, it's just sort of a drag, you know. But yeah. Maybe, who knows, later in life, I don't know. But
Yeah. And so, just if I may, like, how did it feel like when you went from living in Los Angeles from that ancestral home? I mean, that's awesome. And just like leaving it behind and just
It felt great because, like I said, I felt stuck. You know, stuck in Los Angeles, stuck in that house, stuck in this life, stuck in this identity, stuck in this name, and so it was the joy of death and reincarnation without the pain of death, you know, and reincarnation. Yeah. I didn't have to be a baby again and go through puberty again, you know, and all that. So so it was a really good deal, you know. It was wonderful. Gosh, sometimes
people ask.
So when you're
on the plane ride, like, did you have somewhere to go? Like, did you have, like, arrangements lined up? Or were you just like, hey, I gotta do this?
Yeah, no, it was more the latter. I was gonna spend 10 days with the guy in Africa that I knew, Kay. I've interviewed him several times. He's on here on Esoteric Nerd. And then going to Nepal was just the closest thing I had was I had seen Golden Child.
Golden Child.
With Eddie Murphy Goes to Kathmandu, you know, in the 80s, you know. And it's pretty fun, you know. And so I went there and of course they filmed the Kathmandu scenes in Tamil, which is like where the tourists go, and that was where I stayed. So I was like, that's where Eddie Murphy was standing when the bird flew, you know, like, so being a nerd, you know. But yeah, it was at night when I arrived, so it was sort of like, what, where am I? What is this? What have I done? But then I woke up and I heard this music that was Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum.
Yeah.
Om Mani. And you know, you just hear that everywhere in this, the tourist wing, you know, tourist part of Kathmandu. So I felt very, you know, nice there. And then I met this family that ripped me off to the tune of 1,600. But you know, I had fun being ripped off, you know. No, I mean, you know, like, it was an experience. And it was a learning experience, too, you know. My heart was just bleeding. People with a sad story, I'm just like, oh, of course I'll help, you know. And then I was like, you know, trying not to be too resentful once I realized that I was just a bag of money for them, you know. It was a little disappointing. Yeah. Like, anytime I'd meet a Tibetan monk and I'd want to, like, connect with them on a spiritual level and they're looking with dollar signs in their eyes at me, I'm like, shit, you know, okay, is that all I'll ever be? Yeah. And then, so the first poetry book ends sitting on a rooftop restaurant in Tamil, Nepal, Kathmandu, drinking cappuccino and realizing that I really am white. You know, it's this.
Oh, no.
Horrifying, horrible ending. Yeah, like the end of Twin Peaks, you know, season two, where he's beating his head on the mirror and Bob is.
I was expecting a philosophical cherry on the top, but it was, I'm white.
No, no. Well, maybe, you know. So that, but then E-Burrito, it was after that, because then a few months later I met my wife, you know, and everything. Gosh, yeah.
So have you been able to connect to different spiritual practitioners there that you feel is authentic
I'm sure there are, but I'm not interested in any of that.
Just doing your own thing, pretty much.
No, no, I got enough of spiritual masters in the States, you know. Like, I'm over here to be on my own path, as far away from spiritual masters as I can physically get without suffocating in the vacuum of space, you know. But, you know, so that confuses some folks, because a lot of people come to India and thought, oh, I'm here to find the spiritual masters. I'm like, well, there's one, you know, I hear he's okay, but he's not going to let you eat anything but eggs, you know, as far, you know, it's like, okay, I know where some of them are, you know, but then there's the popular ones that are in with the government, and it's like, okay, whatever, you know. Oh, yeah, you know, like when Will Smith got in trouble for being an asshole, so he went to India and hung out with that guru, and he's like friends with the prime minister and stuff, and it's like, okay, you know, so there's that level, yeah, there's that But I mean, but that goes on anywhere, you know. Like there's the Christians that are hanging out with Donald Trump, but in Bhutan it's institutionalized, where there's the you know the royal family wears yellow, and then the people who run the religion wear orange, and then everybody else has to wear brown, and it's kind of like, okay, that's interesting. But it's like the last Tibetan Buddhist country, you know, on Earth. So it's kind of like, all right, you know, like give them a pass for being a little creepy, you know, like it's just you and Kim Jong-un, but it's okay, you know, like no, but the king is nice and everything.
Very cool. And do you plan on going to any of like the mountains or the sacred sites and stuff?
Oh,
like that?
Yeah, no, when I first came, yeah, when I first came, I was into all that. And I got to learn that it's, you get out of it what you put into it. And, right. And, but once you know that, you realize that you don't have to actually go there. But I still do like to every once in a while, but I'm on the level of like, rather than, you know, the classic image of Bruce Wayne climbing up the Everest or something to get to the temple of the Kung Fu, you know, panda or whatever, you know.
Right.
But I like to go to Darjeeling, but it's kind of like my younger self would have been like, now tell me this again. How does this work? So there's a British clock tower in the middle, you know, and it's like, cause when the there was this whole thing where Sikkim was oppressing, there's too many different, there's too much history. So the kingdom of Sikkim, the British came to like help them fight the Nepal. There was this, Nepal was 26 kingdoms, and one of them took over the other 25, and then they were like, you know what, let's take over everything, you know. And so they started taking over, you know, parts of what today is known as India, and the British were like, nah, you know, I mean, with their Indian soldiers, so they were fighting for Britain, but they were Indian, and they were pushing the Nepali out. And then you know, Sikkim was a different country at that time. And then, so then there was this area that was basically occupied by Nepali folk, basically. You know, there were other people that were like, well, I think I have ancestors who walked by there once, you know. But then the king of Sikkim was like, hey, instead of relying so heavily on China for your tea, why don't you just take a bunch of Chinese tea and grow it over there on that mountain over there, where you've got to kick out those Nepali first, you know. And the British were like, good idea. So then they went and did that.
Oh, no.
And then so now, and that's, so the Darjeeling tea, that's what that is. So then there's this big, you know, church clock tower in the middle of the town on top of a beautiful Himalayan snow-capped mountain covered with Tibetan flags. Yeah. But then the Indians kicked the British out, but they kept the British clock tower. So, and then another 80 years went by. So now it's just got a vibe, you know, it's fucking cool, you know, like, and there's a bunch of Tibetan temples there, and a bunch of Tibetan folk live there. There's also Nepali live there. Actually, there's people from every state that live there, you know. I mean, that's something you'll run into with any Indian state, is there's people from every Indian state doing business there. So there's people from Punjab, there's Sikhs, there's Muslims, there's all kinds of people selling Tibetan Buddhist. Like, I probably bought half of these from a Muslim or a Sikh in Darjeeling, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my vibe. I like going to Darjeeling. When it gets too hot here in Goa, then I'll hop on a plane and spend a couple of weeks in Darjeeling and do a little you know, mini pilgrimage to the temples there. But I know that the temple is within me, and absolutely. But I can go to those other temples and experience the templeness of it. But I don't need someone to like interpret it for me or show me where it is. Like, it's there. I see it. It's, you know. And then when I go to a place, sometimes it's crowded, but then when I come home and close my eyes, I can go to the place again and I'm there alone. So that's the nice thing about going to places, you know.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd ever like record like a guided meditation or something?
I have a few, on Esoteric Nerd. Oh, there's cool. the station to station, and there's sprinkled in here and there on Chicken Philosophy. I think you've seen the one called That Thing My Dad Taught Me When I Was Six.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome.
You know, when I became one of the things, when I left Golden Dawn and dove into being a yoga teacher, part of that was so that I could still be at the head of a classroom telling people to lay down and close their eyes and visualize this and that. And And but in a normal setting, in a setting that's socially acceptable, you know, where my boss at work would come, and you know, as opposed to, of course, the Golden Dawn secret society in a warehouse somewhere, you know, it's like, but I was used to, well, it's a, if you want to have a big temple, that's all you have, it has to be a warehouse, you know, like a warehouse space, yeah, like a big space for a factory, you know, like, or cover the whole thing with curtains and have giant pillars, cool. You know. Yeah, I'll send you some pictures of that old temple. Yeah, it's expensive.
I've only been to one. I went to this. I went to an OTO lodge in downtown Sacramento. I'm not really a Crowley guy, my friend invited me, and I felt like it'd be good to go. And so him and I went together, and he's big into Thelema and stuff like that, and we were doing the Gnostic Mass. And I didn't really vibe with it all, but I had some very strange and nice experiences. Like this one lady came up to me. She's like, "Oh my God, thank God. You know, I'm so grateful to see you again." And I was like, "Whoa." Mm. She gave me like a huge hug. Mm. But like normally that'd be weird, but I felt like I didn't know her.
And you she know, was I felt topless.
Like was the... Huh? No.
And not the priestess.
This lodge. And she's like, "Oh my God, I feel like I know you." I was like, "Wow." I felt that connection. I was like, "That's interesting." Mm. And then when they were actually doing the real Gnostic Mass, side tidbit, one of the priests, his garb almost caught on fire. And so they had to like move the candle real quick. And I was like, "Oh." So when we were doing the mass and the prayers and everything, I kept seeing myself, like in my vision, I kept seeing myself at like this, like outside an Egyptian temple, and seeing the campfire, and I could see like the shadows on the wall, like moving, you know, when people were moving, I could feel like this old connection, this ancient connection. And I just kind of kept that to myself, right? And then my buddy, later on, I asked him, I'm like, "Hey, man, so like, what did you think? What was your experience?" He's like, "Oh, dude, I had a really profound experience. I saw like, we were in this temple, and there's this middle fire there, and I could see the shadows dancing on the wall." I was like, "Dude, are you serious?"
Trippy, yeah.
He's like, I'm like, "Dude, I had the same experience." I'm like, "What the heck?" So, I was supposed to go, but yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
but yeah, I better get moving. That's on fun. To our my 4th of July plans here and spend the day outside.
Oh yeah, nice. Happy 4th of July. Yeah, of course. What time is it there?
It's almost 10:10. It's 10:09 right now.
Okay.
Yeah, 10:09 a.m.
Well, this has been fun. Yeah,
it's been so fun.
Do you have any closing thing that you want? Your YouTube channel is called Seize Thunder?
Yeah, Seize Thunder. Yes, Seize Thunder. I'm on TikTok a lot of the time. You know, if you guys are looking for someone to bounce ideas off of, or you know that kind of thing, definitely you know hit me up.
If you want to send me later the whole teaching by email your contact details and usernames on various social media platforms, and I'll include that in the description and whatnot. And I'll send you the collab link. Once it's uploaded, it'll probably be tomorrow sometime. So, you know, in 16 hours or so, you'll probably get that link. Cause I got to record the intro and the outro and all that.
And cue the music.
Yeah.
Cue the chants.
Nice.
All right. Okay. Man, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on today.
It's been an honor. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
You have a great... All right. I don't know, is it... You have a great 4th yourself.
Yeah, is this... It's a special year, isn't it? Oh, 250. It's a 250-year birthday of America. Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
1776 to 2026.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Everybody's a little weird after about 75 or 80, so 250, of course, it's going to be a little Happy birthday, Grandpa. Jesus Christ. Here's your fucking cake. Leave me alone. No. No, the fireworks are fun.
Yeah. It's a celebration. People getting together, so it's good energy there.
Yeah. Family and friends, and it's all good. Okay. So we'll be in touch. I'll send you those links.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, man. Be blessed.
Absolutely. You too. Okay. Peace.
Bye.
Seized Thunder, for being my guest today on the Esoteric Nerd Podcast. Special thanks to Susumu Ueda and his father, as well as the other monks. So Susumu's not a monk, as far as I know, but his father is or was a monk. And, the voices are his father and the other monks at Jofuku Inn, which is one of the, Shingon monasteries on Mount Koyasan in Japan. So, that's pretty awesome. A special thanks to Camille and Kennerly and the twins. This is the new version. It used to just be Camille and Kennerly. It used to sound like this. And now the new 2.0 version sounds like this, which you've heard multiple times by now. That's with the addition of the other twins. Two sets of twins playing that. And most importantly, special thanks to you, the Esoteric Nerd, looking into my eyes. Which reminds me. So the CPCPs, black and yellow, that's me, which is to say Frater BT, reading Carl Jung's black books. None of this Gwydion hat guy, lunatic. None of this me in my street clothes just calling myself Edward. But me, Frater BT, this guy, the guy you see before you, reading Carl Jung's black books. That's what this means. But at the beginning of each episode, we do a thing where we put tarot cards up and there's music playing. So if you click this in the end screen, you'll get to see a half hour of me putting up tarot cards to different music. It's actually better than it sounds. So check that out. Also, the black and purple, which is over here. I think, right? No, not at all. The yellow and purple is going to be over here. And that's all the times that I have read some Christian shit. You know, we read Tellier de Chardin. He's a little controversial for a number of reasons. But we read that Divine Milieu, and then we began reading Nag Hammadi, but then we got diverted, and now we're reading the Acts of Thomas in India. That's all on the black and purple. You can find me reading that stuff. On the black and orange, you'll find me reading the lectures and writings of Martin Luther, followed by the Divine Pymander of Hermes Trismegistus, and we're going to keep reading Westcott's Collectanae Hermetica on the orange. So black and orange is over here, and that leaves black and orange, yellow and orange, and the yellow and green is me reading the Meccan Revelations by Ibn al-Arabi. He's like a intellectual savant. Sufi, as opposed to just a poet. Not to say just a poet. The poets are the best. I also read Hafiz. We do Hafiz Bibliomancy on the yellow and green, and then read Meccan Revelations. So check out all four. And those are compilation videos. They're just sort of fun little intros to kind of give you a taste. There's like little clips of, 40 episodes or 30 episodes, however many of each of the color combinations. So the Chicken Philosophy color pair is what CPCD stands for. So those will be in the end screen. In fact, they're going to pop up right about now. So click one and enjoy. And I'll see you there. Peace.